take us inside this race for minority leader and why Senator Batch decided this was the time for her to seek that post.
Yeah, well, so there has been, I mean, Dan Blue's kind of an icon within Democratic circles. He's been around for, what, 4 decades now, right? First black House Speaker in the state. You know, just somebody who everybody generally speaks well about. But there had been, I think for going back several years, there had been sort of murmurings of discontent with his leadership. And some of that is just a reflection of where Senate Democrats are. They're out of power. They're in a super minority. They really haven't been able to do a whole lot. They haven't advanced their cause very much. And I think there was just, and also the caucus has been changing. There's a lot more younger members. There's more younger being relative, I mean, under 50. There's a lot more, you know, women. There's more people who just weren't around when Dan Blue was sort of at the height of his power. And, you know, I think there was just a lot of folks who felt like they needed to do something different. And you know, there were folks in the caucus who probably felt that they felt the same but didn't want to act on it because they just respected Dan Blue and they wanted Dan Blue to go out on his own timeline. Sydney Batch just decided that it was time. She thought that they needed, now was the time to act. They felt like if they're going to do something, they need to do something now. And she decided to make a run for, make a leadership challenge. And by, basically by the time Dan Blue figured out there was a leadership challenge, Sydney Batch pretty much had the vote to defeat him.
How do you think she's going to run her caucus compared to the way Dan Blue did?
It's kind of hard to tell. I mean, in a lot of ways, a lot of this stuff is going to be behind the scenes, right? Like, she wants to approach the organization a little bit differently. She wants to make her members feel empowered in a way that, you know, kind of she thinks Senator Blue didn't do. I think the most outward-facing thing is that she wants to be more assertive on the media side. Democrats have felt for a while that they were too passive in terms of, like, letting the Republicans in the Senate leadership frame media stories, right? Like, so, you know, what will happen is they'll vote on a bill, right? It'll pass. The Republicans will introduce a bill. It'll pass. And then Senator Berger, who's the Senate leader, Senator President Pro Tem, will hold a gaggle, right? Like, where all the Capitol reporters, usually, you know, half dozen, 10 of them, will go come around and ask him questions. And those questions and his answers to those questions will generally frame how a lot of media outlets cover that story for the next couple of days. And Democrats don't think they've had an effective answer to that. And one of the things that Senator Batch and others brought up to me was that they want to be able to push back and create their own sort of counter-narratives more effectively. They don't think they've been doing that pretty well. I think it's one thing to say we're going to talk to the media more and we're going to put ourselves out there more. I think what remains to be seen to me is whether, you know, more equals more effective.
You mentioned Senate President Pro Tem Phil Berger. What's the relationship like between Senator Batch and Senator Berger?
So far, so they don't know each other well. And this is really interesting. So Senator Berger and Senator Blue had a longstanding, pretty comfortable relationship as far as I understand it. You know, they were obviously they were adversaries in a way, but they were also familiar with each other and they got along pretty well. And so one of the things that happened is Senator Berger, who controlled operations of the Senate and both caucuses and their employees and that sort of thing, when Senator Batch won the leadership challenge, removed two staff members from Senator Batch's office, basically removed two people from her staff. He allowed Dan Blue to keep his office, traditionally the office of the Senate Minority Leader, and his chief of staff, which is Dan Blue is the only person to have a chief of staff besides Sidney Batch, and even though Dan Blue is no longer in any sort of leadership role. And Dan Blue's chief of staff, I think, tied for the highest paid Democratic staffer in the building. And there were a couple other things, like they allowed Dan Blue's allies to get favorable committee seats and get favorable seats on the Senate floor. So there was a lot of like little things that Sidney Batch and her allies sort of viewed as being slight. I think my read on it is that, you know, Senator Berger does not give out loyalty just because, right? Like he's sort of an old school guy, like kind of like Blue was, right? He doesn't just do it because you have a title. And so it's something that Sidney Batch is going to have to earn. And whether I think Batch wants to earn it, maybe is another question.
When Jeffrey, when folks read your story, what do you hope is the biggest takeaway that they have when they read your piece?
I mean, I think one of the interesting things to me is sort of this dynamic that you know, there's a part of me that always wonders, why would somebody want a job that Sidney Batch has, right? Like, so Democrats are in a structural deficit, right? Like, you can win, and the piece addresses this in a roundabout way, but, you know, Democrats can actually win more votes and still end up in a super minority, right? Because of the way districts are drawn, some of it's gerrymandering, some of it's just that Democrats cluster in urban areas, correct, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so it's a hard job, right? You can be effective as a political leader and still lose. And I think it takes kind of a special kind of person to step up and say, hey, I really want to do this. I'm going to lose. And, you know, but I think I can do this in a way that's better. And maybe, you know, our best case scenario is maybe we lose a little less. I do think Batch is an interesting character, though. I think she's an interesting person. She's very, she's colorful. She's very personable. She's friendly. If you spend time with her, you'll like her. I do know people who are kind of like put off by her at first, but I think the more, you know, I think she has this kind of like sharp wit to her that at least I appreciate on a personal level. I think she's going to be one of the more interesting people to watch, and I think she can be a force to reckon with. I also think there's a chance that she's not. I think there is a lot that remains to be seen about how she leads the caucus.
Jeffrey, to let you go, where can our listeners go to find this story and all of your work?
So the Assembly is we're a digital magazine. We cover power and place in North Carolina, and you can see all of our work at theassemblync.com.
Great stuff. Jeffrey Billman with The Assembly and his profile on Sidney Batch. Jeffrey, appreciate your time this morning and hope we get a chance to visit on other stories in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.